This is Hearts of Oak podcast. Free speech, religious disagreement, children's rights, and open and free discussion on any topic are bedrock to a democratic free society, and we seek to promote and champion these basic rights. Join us. Let's keep the conversation going.
Today, I am delighted to have Nick Buckley with me. Nick, thank you so much for your time today.
You're welcome, and thank you for the invitation.
Great to have you on. I've followed Nick Buckley for Mayor on Twitter. I've seen that so often, and it's good to have you on. Obviously, you're standing in the upcoming mayoral elections in Manchester, which is for all those stateside, maybe you don't know British geography, that is the third major metropolitan just behind Birmingham. So it is a major centre in England, in the UK. Obviously, people can find you at Nick Buckley, MBE. Maybe we could just ask you for just touch on why you want to stand for mayor as a quick, and then obviously touch on your background because you're born and bred there, you understand the area, and then maybe get into some of the issues, because I don't think any of us have good words to say about Andy Burnham, who is the Labour mayor up there. But Nick, why on earth did you decide to put yourself forward into the crazy world of politics?
So my journey started 6 years ago. So I stood for this position 6 years ago. And I stood last time as a frustrated Englishman. Our local police force had gone into special measures because they were failing. They'd thrown away 130,000 crimes that were reported and went straight in a bin and no one ever looked at them. It was a computer error. And I thought, what's going on? I've trained police officers. I used to be based in police stations, but I wasn't a police officer. I was a council manager. So I stood last time just on the police. And then this time, in building from that, I mean, if I had to be completely honest, why am I standing? I'm tired. Mm-hmm. I'm tired of seeing my country fail. I'm tired of everything crumbling. I'm tired of nothing working. I'm tired of all politicians from all colours telling us what we want to hear and then walking away and laughing at us, knowing they're going to do nothing about anything. And our country now, and has been for many decades now, we're in managed decline. Every party that comes along, every prime minister that comes along is just the next step in managed decline. They see our problems as too big to fix and too complicated. And they're saying to themselves, why should I ruin my political career and become unpopular by trying to fix the big things? I'm getting paid anyway. And the things I'm going to fix will have a benefit next year because I want to get voted back into power. And to fix our big problems, we need statespeople. We need people who put plans in for 20, 30, 40 years from now and don't care if they ruin their career doing it because they're doing it for the benefit of the country. And that's why I'm standing. I'm not saying I'm a states person. I'm not saying I'm an amazing person. I'm just saying I'm going to try to be a better person. I'm going to try to improve my country. I may fail, but I want to try.
I thought that makes sense. And for all the war room posse stateside, I mean, a war room with Bannon, for the viewers, you get Steve talking about not only the air war in these issues on the media side, but it has to be that ground support and people getting involved in the local institutions. And that's exactly what we're going to touch on with Nick today. And that will give you a flavor of what's happening here, and his journey and his story. And I know it will inspire wherever you're watching, if it's the UK stateside, across Europe, then actually you'll be able to take Nick's story and I think apply that to where you are. But Nick, this is the area you are. This is Manchester, and obviously many people will know Manchester from football. The Americans may know it from soccer, with two teams there. Personally, I've always grown up as a Liverpool Football Club supporter. When I first came back to Northern Ireland from the Republic of Ireland, the only two teams I heard of were Manchester and Liverpool. So those are obviously the only two teams that existed in 1986. So yeah. I plumped for one of them. But you have grown up in that area. You are born and bred. Do you want to let us know your background? Because the background of working in the community, your work on the homeless side is something which actually maybe later on in the year we can just have a single podcast on that, because it's something that's been in my mind for 6 months, and you understand that. But tell us about you, your background, your work prior to any thought of political involvement.
Sure. So there's two sides to this. So there's the personal side, which I'll do first. So who am I? I was just a poor kid raised by a single parent on a failing council estate in South Manchester. The estate's called the Anton Estate, notorious now for drugs, guns, gangs, violence, just what you'd imagine on a real sinking council estate. Went to a failing school. Luckily, I was fairly intelligent, so I passed my exams, but my school was a failing school. It got closed down completely the year after I left. My music teacher was stabbed 42 times in the chest for confiscating a porno magazine off a pupil. Another teacher was sexually abused by 12 lads in the stairwell. I could walk from my English classroom to my geography classroom through a hole in the wall that the pupils had kicked the breeze blocks out of the wall to make an extra doorway. So that was my schooling. I had no father figure, no male role models in my life. I drifted through my teens and my 20s. I thought I'd be a millionaire. I thought somebody would knock on my front door and offer me amazing opportunities. But surprise, surprise, no one ever knocked on my door. And then I got to 30 and thought to myself, this isn't working out, is it, Nick? So I got a job at Manchester Airport, and immediately my life changed. I had a regular wage coming in. I made friends. I could plan holidays. I excelled at everything I did. I excelled. I then went traveling around the world for a couple of years in my early 30s. I came back unemployed and got a leaflet through the door from Manchester Council saying, do you want a job in regeneration? So I applied for that, got that job, and that led into a career. I did a placement at the council in a team called the Crime and Disorder Team. And suddenly I found something that I was excellent at, not because I'd been to university, which I haven't, not because I studied, but because I was one of those kids who were trying to stop getting involved in crime. I was one of those kids who grew up on the same estates, the same streets, had the same problems, had the same excuses. So some of my colleagues were middle-class, white, university-educated women, and they were going, oh, I feel sorry for you. It's because you're a single parent's household. I feel sorry for you because your dad's in jail. And I'm doing the opposite. I'm going, stop lying to me. This is your fault why you're here today in a police station. It's your responsibility. And if this carries on, we're going to evict you and your family from your house. We have the power to do that. And when your little sister's homeless, it's your fault. Look at your mum now. Your mum's crying over this. This is your fault. And I was tough love. And I loved these kids, but I was tough love because I wanted the best for them. And pandering to people making poor choices helps no one. And again, I excelled, I got promoted. And at the end, I was running Manchester City Centre in terms of reducing crime and disorder based in the City Centre Police Station. And then my life changed, as in we had something in the UK called austerity, which means in 2011, the government almost ran out of money and started cancelling everything. My job and my team got cancelled. I took redundancy. And I used that money to set up a charity to carry on that work on the streets, working with kids, trying to show them all the opportunities this amazing country has on offer. But there's no point having those opportunities on offer if the people who live in this country can't see them, because they've not been trained to see opportunities. We've not given them the confidence, the skills, the aspiration to grasp those opportunities. So I set a charity up to do that. That charity now is a multi-award winning charity, and I was awarded an MBE off our late Queen for that particular work. Then we then set up some homeless projects, so getting rough sleepers off the streets into accommodation, into support, and the charity did absolutely amazing but groundbreaking work, because I had the same philosophy with people who are rough sleeping. Stop telling me this isn't your fault. You made lots of wrong choices, and that's why you ended up on the streets. We want to help you, and we will support you to have a better life. But the first step in this journey, you need to realize you weren't a victim in this. you contributed to your downfall. And until you recognize that, you're not going to change your life, but we're going to help you anyway. And it doesn't matter how many times you mess up these chances. It doesn't matter, because we'll come back the next day and offer you another chance. Because in this country, we don't ever run out of chances for our fellow citizens. If they mess up, we start again. Because I don't want to see people failing in life. I don't want to see people living on the streets. And I don't want to see people in jail because we gave up on them. And I'm sick of us giving up on people and just throwing money at them and going, you stay there, you shut up, you just watch TV, you have a crap life and don't cause us any problems. And I don't do that with people. I want them to have the best life they can. And the first step is personal responsibility.
Tell us the charity you'd set up. Tell us about that. And then also, in I think was it 2019, that you there was a backlash on you for what you tweeted, and you had to fight back on that. Because not only setting up the charity, that's one thing, but that backlash shows where we are as a society. And I think that will resonate with the viewers, realizing that you weren't willing just to go away quietly. You're willing to fight for something because you believe in it.
Yeah, so I set the charity up basically with my redundancy money. So, you know, I had 20 grand payout and I used all of that to set a charity up and fund it for the first couple of years while we were trying to build a reputation and trying to get money into the charity. Excuse me. But while I was doing that, it's only when I look back, I realized what I was doing. I was also campaigning as well. I was on Twitter. I was on Facebook. I was challenging government policy. I'm talking about all the time why we have these social problems in the UK, especially with kids getting involved in crime. The big issue there, fatherlessness. Yeah. It's about not having fathers in the home. And so I talked about that. I talked about how our government policies is constantly breaking up the family. And they do it from a position of compassion. We need to support single mums. We need to support kids. But what they're actually doing is funding people to make poor choices. And then you wonder why more people make poor choices. Well, we've normalized it and we're funding them to do it. And I'm not saying these things are simple to fix. They're extremely complicated to fix. But the first step is let's stop making things worse. That should always be the first step. I spent time criticizing other organizations. You know, we have an organization in the UK called The Big Issue. It's a street newspaper that homeless people sell on the streets to earn money to stop them being homeless. It's basically a racket. It's a con. It helps nobody who's homeless. I've never met a person rough sleeping who's ever sold it. It's now just a magazine making money for the people who own the magazine. So I've called them out many times. So then in 2020, there was the death of a career criminal in America called George Floyd. Yep. And we had peaceful riots in London where 27 police officers were injured in peaceful riots, according to the BBC. And that was the first time I'd ever really heard of Black Lives Matter. I think I'd heard of them before, American connected, but who cared? So I Googled Black Lives Matter, got to their website, not a conspiracy theory website, their own website. And I read it and I went, I don't like the sound of any of this. Defund the police, overthrow capitalism. And the one that jumped out to me was disrupt the Western nuclear family. And I had to sit back and go, what does that mean? They're all English words, but I've never seen them in that context before. And I thought about it and I thought, it has to mean we need less fathers in the home. Yeah. That's what that means. And that's when I went, no, I'm not having this. At the moment, everyone in the UK thinks Black Lives Matter are Gandhi and Mandela. I'm going to write a blog about this and I'm going to tell people what's on their website. So I wrote a blog in end of May 2020, put it on from a personal perspective, nothing to do with a charity, my personal blog, put it online. It was online for a week or two, no issues. And then someone read it, copied the link and put it on Twitter. And it went mental overnight. I was instantly a Nazi, a racist. Someone set a petition up to have me fired from the charity I founded. A volunteer at the charity resigned and emailed the board saying I was a Nazi. And then the board of the charity, I appointed the board. So the board sit above me, but I appointed them. Personal friends. And they sacked me over email. I got a one-line email saying, you're fired immediately. Terminated immediately was the term they used. Wow. My life fell apart that first week. You know, I'm now known as Nick the Nazi. No one really came to my defense. The online mob was attacking me. And I thought, my life's done. How am I'm never going to work again in this field. I'm going to struggle getting another job.
Yeah.
And I felt sorry for myself. And it took a week. And after a week, I heard this little voice say to me, what are you doing? Get up. Brush yourself down, best foot forward, and take these people on. That's the message you've always given to tens of thousands of young people, is stop thinking yourself as a victim. You know, brush yourself down, do something, fight back, stop being defeated. And that's what I did. So I got a pen and paper and thought, right, I need to write a plan about how I'm going to fight back. And that's what I do for a living. I write very complicated strategies to solve social problems. So I wrote a strategy. And while I'm writing that, there was a literal knock on my front door. And I thought, oh, who's that? So I answered it. And it was a national newspaper, the Mail on Sunday. Said, oh, can we do an interview? And I thought, oh, Jesus, I didn't expect this. What do I do? And I thought about it for 5 seconds and thought, perfect timing.
Yeah.
Nothing can get worse. So I invited him in, sat down, did an interview. The following Sunday, they published a 2-page piece on me and my story, and everything changed overnight. Suddenly, I had hundreds, if not thousands, of messages from across the world telling me I was right, telling me to stand up. I had one guy offering to pay my wages, which I didn't need at that time, which was lovely of him. And I realized I'm definitely in the right here. You know, then someone else contacted me and said, I'm setting up a petition to have you reinstated. And by that point, I joined a free speech union in the UK, set up by a gentleman called Toby Young. He phoned me up. I had a chat with him. He got me a free solicitor because at that point I had a couple of grand in the bank. And I thought, I can't afford a solicitor because I don't know how much they cost. And I've got bills to pay over the next couple of months. And it's going to take me months to get a job. I can't afford to spend my life savings on a solicitor. So they got me a solicitor for free of charge. I then put a lot of pressure on the board. I started doing all the press I could. I had friends and managers still at the charity phoning me up every day, telling me what was going on, saying the board's collapsing. Some of the board now have gone absent without leave. They can't stand the press. The press are phoning them up. They've turned the phones off. We don't know what to do. And I thought, right. The board don't like pressure, do they? I'll give you pressure. So I started doing every bit of press I could, attacking the board, naming the board, talking about what they should have done. And every time I did the press then contacted the board for comments. And the feedback was, it's driving them crazy. So this was a 5-week fight. It doesn't sound a long time now, but it was a 5-week fight. And eventually I forced the board to resign in disgrace. And then I appointed a new board to the charity and they offered me my job back, which I accepted.
So this was at what end of 2020?
This was all June and July 2020.
Okay. So tell me how, because that got you into the fight. Suddenly you were exposed to the world of media in a way that you hadn't seen before. Suddenly you're exposed to actually how the backlash you can have when you touch on any of these topics. So does that then prepare you? Does that then propel you? Does that give you then the idea of actually putting yourself forward? Because the elections in Manchester were, May 2021. So they were, just under a year later.
Yeah. The biggest lesson I got out of my fight was twofold. The first one was, I was a lot stronger than I thought I was. And the second was, they were all so easy to beat. All I had to do was stand up to all of them, and they were all easy to beat. The online mob stopped attacking me once I got that article in the mail on Sunday. And they realized how many people supported me, and they started getting attacked online. They all just disappeared overnight because they were bullies, and bullies can't stand up for themselves, and bullies will always leave someone to go find someone else weaker. And that's exactly what they did. They just disappeared overnight once they realized I had support. And the board all resigned once they realized I was fighting back, and I threatened them all with legal action. And they all said to themselves, why are we doing this? We don't get paid for this position. It's not our charity. And suddenly I've got skin in this game. It was easy to sack Nick when no one cared, but now everyone cares. We're just going to resign and walk away. What they should have done was supported me 5 weeks earlier, and together we would have beat them all. But no, they had to be cowards and they had to jump on the wrong side. So I realized then I was stronger than I ever thought I was. And that has prepared me now. I don't get attacked online anymore now. Because who wants to attack someone who won't back down, who will fight back, who basically doesn't care what you say about me, who's worked in the social settings for decades. So when you call me a nasty Tory, or I'm not even a Tory, I've never joined any political party. When you call me a Tory or call me a Nazi, it's like, oh, well, I'm a strange sort of Nazi, considering I've got 100 people off the streets into accommodation, considering I've stopped 15 girls being raped, considering I've stopped hundreds of kids being pulled into criminal gangs. I'm a strange sort of Nazi, aren't I? But I'm a racist. Oh, strange sort of racist. When I've helped thousands of black kids and Asian kids into better lives. And it's like, well, I'm a strange sort of evil Nazi. So all those things don't stick on me either. Oh, I'm a homophobe. Well, I'm a very strange, considering I employ lots of gay people. And the chair of the charity I appointed on several times now has been a gay man. You know, I'm a very strange homophobe. So none of these things stick with me. But then on the election side, I decided, well, I've always lived by this lesson, which is just tell the truth.
Yeah.
Because I believe that to be true. And these are my opinions. And if you don't like what I want to do, well, I need to tell you this anyway, so you don't vote for me by mistake. I don't want people voting for me by mistake because that damages our democracy, because that makes people then say to themselves, oh, I was conned there. I was tricked voting for that person because he's not like that. I'd rather you vote for someone else so you can have some, so you can foster some trust in our democracy. So I tell people in very plain English and matter-of-factly who I am, what I do, and what I think, and what I'll do if I'm elected. And if you like what I say, well, you know exactly what you're going to get. And if you don't like what I'm saying, well, please don't vote for me, because I'm not for changing. You cannot influence me to change, because I know exactly what I want to do. So it's made me stronger. And I deal with the press exactly the same way. I say to them, this is it. Oh, I go, well, you can say, oh, if you want to, what I've just said. But that's my stance.
Yeah, I realized how vicious the press were in 2019 with campaign manager for UKIP, and they would go after anyone. They didn't care what they did to people as long as they got a story. And I had no idea how dangerous and vicious and destructive that the mainstream media can be. So that was my eye-opener. Tell me about you. You stood for one of the smaller, one of the alternative parties called Reform. You're standing now as an independent. I mean, tell us about kind of that journey. It's obviously safer being part of a party. There are restrictions. Tell us the story all around that.
Yep. So it was 2021. I was sat watching TV. And the press just announced that Greater Manchester Police have gone into special measures, which means they're a failing police force, which means the government's now running the police service in Greater Manchester. And I was shocked. Like I said before, I was based in police stations. I've trained police officers. I've devised, patrol plans, projects to help reduce crime and disorder. I've got a cabinet full of awards of all these projects I designed that, all were recognised as being fantastic in, reducing crime. And I thought, I can't have this. If we don't have a professional police force dealing with criminals, then society will crumble. It'll be anarchy. And, roll on 6 years. We're getting there now. Our police force now is not even a police force anymore. It's a police service. pink and fluffy nonsense all the time. Don't say hurty words. Please don't upset the paedophiles. So therefore, we've got to call them minor attracted people because we don't want to upset the pedos. That's what's happening now. So I decided, what am I going to do? Maybe I set up a Facebook group and campaign and try to shame our mayor, Andy Burnham, for allowing this to happen. And then a couple of days later, there was another press article, and it was from a gentleman called Richard Tice, who was setting up a new party called Reform. And I thought, right, you've not got a candidate standing for mayor of Greater Manchester because you're brand new. So I tweeted him, and he phoned me up and said, yeah, you can stand for us, Nick. And the reason why I wanted to stand for a party at that point was, what do I know about standing for such a position for mayor of Greater Manchester? I don't know anything about it. There's only 8-9 weeks before the election. I need lots of help and support. I need people who know what they're doing. So I stood for them. I never joined the party. Even afterwards, I didn't join the party. I've never been a member of any political party in the UK. But it was a marriage of convenience. So I stood for them. And then I also realized when I was standing that, and we all do this, we all think we know nothing when we've never done it before. And then I realized with Reform, half the people here don't know anything either. and they're just guessing. And it's all educated guessing of what they should do. But when I was campaigning last time, I had so many people telling me, I'm not voting for you, Nick, because I don't vote for any political parties. Because they're all as bad as each other. They all lie to us. And then when they get into power, they all change their policies. They don't do what they say they're going to do. Plague on all your houses. I'm not voting for anybody. I'm just not going to vote at all. And that's when I decided, if I ever stand again, I have to stand as independent. I have to be able to say to people, there's no bosses above me. There's no one pulling my strings. Because let's say you are elected as a Reform UK candidate. And then Reform change policy. What's one candidate going to do about that? Nothing. So I said, no more strings. No puppet masters above me pulling my strings. I will say what I say and I will do what I do. And if I fail, there's only one person you can hold accountable, and that's me. And I will take personal responsibility for my failures. I don't have to say, oh, the party changed, the party won't allow it. No, it all comes down to me. So that's why I'm an independent candidate this time.
Well, tell us, because you've got in the UK, again, for non-UK viewers, you've got the Lib Lab Con, you've got the Liberal Democrats, who are all the middle-class white justice warriors. If I can summarize, you've got Labour, who were the party of the working class and now abandoned that and basically gone hook, line and sinker into the woke nonsense. And then you've got the so-called conservatives that haven't conserved anything in our society over the last 14 years. And you're right, it's a plague on all their houses. Obviously in Manchester, it's a urban area and therefore has been, as you see across many parts of Europe or the States, predominantly more on the left. And that's why it's been a Labour heartland. Andy Burnham, the mayor at the moment, was an MP for, 18 years. So he's full-on establishment figure. Many talked about him actually leading the Labour Party. He's been there for, I think, this will be his third term.
Yes.
Tell us what he has done to the city. Because the whole concept of mayors is a fairly new concept in the UK. And people thought, great, you'll have a local person taking charge and actually doing what's right for local people. But under Andy Burnham, that doesn't seem to be the case of Manchester. Am I missing something?
No. If you could ask somebody to list his achievements as mayor, I don't think they could name anything. The only chance they could name is, we now have slightly cheaper bus fares. But again, why do we have cheaper bus fares? Because our council taxes have gone up to pay for them.
Yeah.
So it's just basically a socialist project. But what people don't realize about the cheap buses, it's a 3-year project. And if he doesn't increase passenger numbers by 30% in 3 years, the whole project can go bankrupt. Mm. And maybe we'll have no buses then. So this might not end well. Andy Burnham is a career politician. And that's the problem with the UK, is everything is full of career politicians. We don't have statespeople anymore now. We have career politicians. He took the job in Greater Manchester because Jeremy Corbyn had just been elected Labour leader. And he knew that wasn't going to end well for Labour. So he decided to jump ship, get a safe job somewhere, keep in the press, build up his CV about running, you know, a region, and, you know, I'm a mini prime minister. This will look great for when I challenge and want to be prime minister. So he came to Greater Manchester with the strategy of do nothing in case it goes wrong. Don't put your head above the parapet. Do all the press and PR you can. Go to the press and talk about national issues all the time. Yep. Never talk about regional issues in case someone says, well, you're in charge of this. Always talk about national issues as if you're a prime minister in waiting. And the press named him King of the North, which was quite insulting. And we know what happened to the King of the North in Game of Thrones. They chopped his head off, so you never know what could happen. So what's he done in Greater Manchester? He's done basically nothing apart from anything that was good for Andy Burnham. When he first came into office, he said he would end rough sleeping in 3 years. He's now had seven, spent something like £500 million, and the numbers are going up. So he's failed on that. The police was being warned by government every year that they're failing. Every year, failing, failing, failing. He had 3 years of warnings, and then it got taken into special measures. So he failed at Greater Manchester Police. Crime is going through the roof in Greater Manchester. It's an epidemic. Violent crime's going up, knife crime's going up, sex offences is going up, and drug offences all going up under his watch for the last 7 years since he's been in power. He's achieved nothing. Even the things he's completely in charge of, he's not improved, because he doesn't want to take the chance of things going wrong and him being blamed. The worst thing he's ever done is he treats Greater Manchester as a stepping stone to 10 Downing Street and being Prime Minister. That's all this is, a stepping stone.
Tell us about the police. That's something that stuck out with me, probably from highlighting the issues of the grooming gangs and seeing the police turn a blind eye all across the country to those girls who are being systematically abused and raped. And of course, in that Greater Manchester area, you've got Rochdale, which is certainly one of the epicenters, along with Rotherham over in Yorkshire. And of course, the police going to special measures. It wasn't just that, and we've had another recent report, utter failings. And of course, the politicians say, "Well, it's not our fault. It was someone before us." They've got I think half the country have zero prosecutions for burglary over the last 3 years. It's not even managed to climb, but not even managed. It's just watch it collapse. Tell us about the feelings of the police, because the police are under the mayor. That is Andy Byrne's responsibility. And you used to have politicians that will say the buck stops here. The buck doesn't seem to stop with Andy, because it's not his fault. So how have the police collapsed into such a horrendous state of chaos?
It's not all Andy Burnham's fault. It's been going on for decades. It started with the politicization of the police. And I was watching that when I was in police stations, local councillors, MPs being able to basically direct police what to do and suggest this is where you should be spending your resources, and using it as a political tool for them to be elected and for them to look good in certain communities. So this was happening 20, 30 years ago. And then we got the woke agenda turned up 20 years ago. And that started infiltrating the police. That's when they wanted to start treating different communities differently, where they all should have been treated the same. And I saw this 20 years ago as well. You know, I was part of a project that wanted to clamp down on a male prostitution area in the city centre of Manchester. And first of all, we were told you can't do it because we need to consult with the gays first, so we don't think we're homophobic. And our answer was, they're breaking the law. It's lewd behaviour in public, because we're having sex with each other in public on a public footpath that families can see. So we had to consult for a year. And then the vast majority of gay people said it is disgusting, clamp down on that. So we were going to clamp down on it. And then from the top brass came, cancel that whole project in case we get called homophobic. So we allowed a particular community to carry on breaking the law in case we got called hurty names by the press. Mm. And that was 20 years ago. It's got a lot worse since then. So now the police across the country care more about hurty words, about pronouns. You can't read the Bible on the streets. In the UK now, in case someone finds that offensive, you can be arrested. You misgender somebody, you can be arrested. You can have the police knocking on your door for hurty words on Twitter and Facebook. All these things have nothing to do with the police. Absolutely nothing. And if I'm elected mayor, this stops day one. I can't change the law, but what I can do is deprioritize certain crimes. Yeah. And the woke nonsense will be deprioritized all the way to the bottom. It will still be on the statute books. It still will be illegal, but we'll have no time to investigate any of those crimes because we'll be looking at violent crime and knife crime and sex crime. So that started infiltrating the police. And then the police, over many decades now, 50 years, I'd say, have started reducing the recruitment standards. So we started reducing the physical recruitment standards so we could have women join. So then we got weak men as well joining. And then we started reducing the tests you take so we could get migrants to join, but they couldn't speak English. So we started reducing the English tests and we started just reducing, which means at this moment in time in the UK, a criminal with a criminal record can join the police. Right. How mental is that? We've got people who can't speak English joining the police. We've got people who are not... who weren't even born in this country joining the police. Anyone can join the police now. That's why the level and competency of our police officers is at an all-time low. I've had police officers speaking to me off the record in Greater Manchester saying to me, Nick, if we can sack 15 to 20% of all police officers in Greater Manchester overnight and do not replace them, Greater Manchester's performance will improve overnight because we're spending so much time sending good officers to correct the mistakes of poor officers. And we're saying we're doing it all the time. 15 to 20% of police officers, according to existing police officers, are so poor they should be kicked out of the job on day one. So I'll be ramping up recruitment and the standards to be a police officer. And lots of these things, to get promoted in the police, at the interview panel, you've got to come up with a new idea. And that new idea usually has to be based on wokeness. Mm. So if you have an idea about how you can engage black, blue-haired lesbians in wheelchairs who have Maori face tattoos, well, you're a sergeant now. You're a chief inspector now. That's an amazing idea. So we keep promoting woke fools who then promote more woke fools. And the culture in the police now is all around this. So I'll be stopping all that if elected as mayor. Now, what's also damaging the police is they have no one in politics to stand up for them. Mm. So we've seen this in London. The armed police in London, lots of them now have handed in their firearms because the mayor of London threw them under the bus when they shot a criminal. And the press went, oh, they should have shot him in the shoulder. They should have shot the gun out of his hand like they do in Westerns. But believe me, when you've got a known criminal who's got a violent history and is known for having guns on him and shooting people, and you're face to face with him and you pull your gun and he doesn't do as he's told, you've got a micro split second to make a decision. And they shot him. And now the mayor's throwing those officers under a bus, disgraceful. So as mayor of Greater Manchester, I'll be protecting my police officers. If they break the law, we'll be sacking them. So I'm having no poor officers. But if you do something in your job, well, I'll be supporting you. I'll be protecting you from the press. I'll be protecting you from the race baiters and the grifters. I'll be protecting you because the buck has to stop somewhere. And because I'm a big promoter of personal responsibility, it has to stop with me. I will give the police the confidence to do their job. And their job, and make no bones about it, their job is to hammer criminals. And we're going to go back to that.
It does seem whenever a mayor was in City Hall, Greater London Assembly, and we had some police officers came in to talk to the UKIP group, so more off the record, they were talking about they spend so much of their time dealing with hate crimes, so hurty words online, and they also spend so much time having to fill out paperwork and explain their actions. And they were basically saying that our hands are tied because politicians want to look good. They are less concerned of crime. They are just concerned of a story that may affect them. And I assume it's exactly the same in Manchester. The police find themselves restricted by politicians more worried about a soundbite and a story than actual crime.
It's exactly the same, And that's the culture we need to change. We need to be able to say to people, yeah, you might not like the way that person was arrested because those people filmed it on their phones. You might, that might look wrong to you, but have a look at the crime stats in your area now. They're falling, aren't they? So what do you want? Do you want pink and fluffy policing like you had last year and your crime rates were high? Or do you want robust policing like that, like you've just seen on video, and your crime rates is now half it was 2 years ago? So make a decision as voters. Because if you want more crime, don't vote me in again as mayor, because I'll be doing exactly what we're doing now. And I support those officers, and they did the right thing. We need some politicians with a backbone and some courage. And we need some politicians who don't mind losing their job over it because they knew it was the right thing to do. And the people who don't do that are called career politicians because all they care about is being elected again. I don't necessarily want to be elected again. I don't care. I want to improve my country. And if I do my bit and other people do their bit, we'll live in a better country.
Let me just bring, there are just two other things. One, I want to bring up a graphic, and you mentioned career politicians. So let me bring that up. And that is comparing, this is on your Twitter feed, comparing you and Andy Burnham. It does look as if Andy Burnham has never done a proper job in his life. I don't know if you can correct me, but you've been on the ground, you're understanding the issues, working for local businesses, dealing with destructive behavior there, proposing solutions, working in the charitable sector. It seems as though you're the opposite of Andy Burnham, or am I missing something?
No, I am the opposite. Andy Burnham went straight from university into politics, and he's had a political job from leaving university all the way to being mayor. And when I put that graphic out, I mean, that graphic also mentions what I've done, you know, being self-employed, running a small business, getting a job at Manchester Airport, working with young people starting to get involved in crime, being a crime manager across Greater Manchester, running a charity, tackling crime and homelessness. So I've done what I would class important jobs. And that's given me life experience, and it's given me knowledge on how we solve social problems. He has no knowledge on how to solve social problems. If he wanted to solve a social problem, he would have to speak to people like me. So let's cut out the middleman and let's just elect me. And then you'll have the person that Andy Burnham should have been speaking to get his knowledge from. Now, I've had some criticism of that graphic, and one or two people have commented saying, thanks for that, Nick. I now know who to vote for, and it's not you, because Andy Burnham has more experience than you. And my response to them is, he has a lot more experience than me in being a career politician, in being part of the problem, in being part of the mainstream political blob. And if you value that, then wonderful. And now I've helped you to know who to vote for. Vote for him, because you actually value that. But most people don't value career politicians. They value and can appreciate experience and knowledge and working on the front line and that experience. So again, I'm giving people a choice. I'm not hiding the choices. I want to give people clear choices so people are not mistaken and vote for me by mistake. There's your choice, plain and simple. Vote for the person you think will run your area the best. And some people obviously don't think it would be me.
Well, obviously, the election's coming up 2nd of May, and we have elections here where I am in London, elections all across the country, many elections. Yeah. You've touched on policing. Could just finish off with the other areas. You mentioned transport. I assume that's under the mayor's purview. I guess regeneration and housing also fits under, and some of the services that people rely on. Okay, just mention what else so people have an understanding of the importance of changing who is in the top, because that will change their lives immeasurably.
Yeah, so the police really is the only thing Andy Burnham is fully in control of. Everything else is he has an influence in. So that'll be a lot harder for the mayor to have completely their own way because he has an influence in those things. So in my term in office, I'm not going to interfere with the things that I can't control, because I know for a fact the councils, the NHS, all the top civil servants, all the MPs in Greater Manchester are all going to hate me straight away because I'm going to make them hate me. So they're not going to support me in anything I want to change. I can solve rough sleeping in Greater Manchester because I'll have the money to do that. I'm going to make sure no one sleeps on the streets in Greater Manchester. I'm going to make sure there's a bed and hostels for anyone to access every day of the year, which Andy Burnham promised to do and has failed. But my next big project after that is going to be holding civil servants and councils to account. Now, at the moment, we know our councils and the NHS and all these institutions are incompetent and wasteful. We know that. Nothing new there. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to name and shame the people running those organisations and those departments and those services. I'm going to be going, Joe Bloggs in the NHS has just spent £500,000 on a new IT system that doesn't work. He's called Joe Bloggs. We need to do something about Joe. I'm going to go and this council manager has just spent £50,000 on rainbow badges. At the same time, we've now closed down two libraries. I'm going to be naming people because unless we name and shame people, nothing will change. And I want to get to a stage in Greater Manchester where top civil servants from planning meetings, designing new projects, and they come up with, right, we need to go away. And we need to double check everything here. We need to double check all the figures. We need to make sure we can't get any of these things cheaper. And we need to make sure this project works. Because that crazy mayor of ours will name us in the national press. And I'm not prepared to have my reputation damaged and my pension damaged and me being looked like a fool in the national press. So we better make sure this project works. That's how I want to run Greater Manchester. And that's why I know a lot of the institutions won't work with me. So therefore, I'm not going to work with them. I'm going to shame them into doing better and providing better and delivering better services because I'm going to give all of them skin in the game. I'm going to make sure that when those services fail, they fail individually. And that's how we start getting better services across Greater Manchester. And if it works in Greater Manchester, it'll work across the UK.
100%. Nick, I really appreciate you coming along. I don't know why it's taken me so long to get you on, but by fault, really appreciate you coming on. The election is in 2 months, 2nd of May, and people can help by obviously promoting. They can go on Twitter. They can follow you. Obviously, the website, Nick Buckley for Mayor, the number 4.co.uk. All the links will be in the description, whether you're watching or listening on any of the podcasting apps. But just, Nick, think just how people might watch this and think, how can I actually get involved? Even if they don't live in Manchester, they can still put out the message using social media. Would that be your request for those outside Manchester?
Absolutely. So there's two ways you can help. Share all my social media because you don't know who else is going to see it. The mainstream media are not touching me, so I'm getting no mainstream media help whatsoever, which I didn't expect, let's be honest. So I need people sharing. If you've got friends who live in Greater Manchester and family, speak to them and say to them, have you heard of Nick Buckley? Because a recommendation from you means a lot more than them reading a tweet about me. So speak to them. And if you're a millionaire or you've got some spare money, please donate to my campaign because, you know, running campaigns costs money. I'm definitely standing no matter what. If you can't afford it, don't worry about it. But, you know, you never know who's got some money to throw at a campaign. And that's the way people can help me at the moment. Or if you've got your own podcast, or, you know, you run a website that does articles, speak to me. And I'm writing articles all the time. I'm doing podcasts all the time. I just need to raise my profile. That's how I can reach the most voters.
Okay, well, people can DM you. They can obviously contact you through the website, or they can drop us info@heartsofoak.org an email. We'll certainly pass that on. So, Nick, I appreciate your time. I know you've got a lot on in the campaign as it gets closer, but thank you so much for giving us your time today.
You're welcome, and thank you for the opportunity.
If you like what we do, sign up to our mailing list, donate, share, and subscribe to our many platforms at heartsofoak.org. Thank you for listening.